some work hours, and that she was unable to do some work based on that she had to go home because of the work hours. And then in person, we had a brief conversation, and I felt that that conversation should be not in private, but as a group in the board. The last board meeting, we had, based on historically, from my understanding, work hours of certain employees, which is solidifying it in permanent record. And I don't think that it changed anything that Ms. Stang did, but I thought it would be good that we discussed how that was being handled, and the fact that Dr. Adams, basically none of us are really here, perhaps Dr. Adams can tell us how her work schedule would be handled, so that she's clear on getting a job done, flexing hours, and if at all ever necessary, which I don't really see anything except for like the superintendent search was very intense, and that might be a reason for overtime, but I really thought that that discussion would be better for Dr. Adams to have with the board instead of just me. So that's why it's on the agenda, and Dr. Adams can, you know.
Thank you.
And I think that prompted us to look at a schedule so Ms. Stang would know, since time immemorial, school board secretaries work at night on two board meeting times. So it's always been a flex schedule. So in light of the information that was placed on the agenda regarding the Fair Labor Standards Act, we really wanted to readdress that issue. So what she and I have looked at as a schedule is we have talked about having 4 hours beyond the workday during the board days, which would take you till 9 o'clock if necessary. And so what Ms. Stang and I have looked at is her coming in at 9 o'clock in the morning on Monday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday, which would make up those, flexing her schedule for those 4 hours. So unless something were to change and, we needed some additional hours on board weeks, her hours are 9 to 5 on Monday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday, 8 to 9 basically if we need it on Tuesdays, and then on the off weeks, it's the same, 8 to 5. Okay, so this kind of keeps it within that 40-hour work week. And I told her, I said, like before, we're always willing to flex if we need to or readjust the schedule if necessary.
I definitely think that I don't want to speak for everybody, but I certainly know it doesn't happen much, and let's hope it doesn't happen much, never mind, but that search was intense and there was a lot of files that needed to be made, and that would be a situation where I could see where she would need overtime, and I can't foresee other projects, and certainly we would be totally fine with an exception like that.
Sure.
I'm glad that you were able to clarify.
Yeah. And usually what we ask, that the employer asks, is if you think overtime is going to be necessary, that you get prior, let's come in and talk about it, so we're prepared for that. But, I think for the most part, flexing has worked.
Does she visit with you on the need for overtime? Does she have to come to the board? Or how does
she would come to me.
If she needs to work, we need to get the job done.
That's
I'm
right.
Quite sure you're going to approve that. And that's in place now?
Yes.
Okay. Matt is not here. the issue that, let's just go ahead by the order of the chair. My issue was a capital money sharing in charter schools. We talked about that before. There's some legislation cooking in the legislature now. That could negate our even talking about it. But if the rules, and I've got my paperwork on that, but if the rules that we have in place in their contract says we're supposed to share those capital dollars with them, why aren't we doing that? I believe the contract says that the contract that we have with them says that we'll share a good part of that revenue with, especially from the $6 million money, with the charter schools.
Especially with the what?
With this, I think it's a special revenue bond that we had, like
six mil.
I mean, it's a lot of difference, but if our contract with them says that, we need to be following our contract. And from what I understand, we're not doing that at this time.
I think that there's a misunderstanding around this issue. When you talk about the current operating discretionary millage levy, that does not encompass the referendum for critical operations. And when you weren't on the board, but you were at the meeting, I recall, but you guys weren't at the meeting and you weren't at the board on the board at the time, when the school district moved forward with this, it was very clear what the percentages were going to be and what that would look like. And it is unfortunate that years later we are hearing this complaint and we are hearing information about money not being shared, when in fact, when we had the 0.25 mil, the school district did share money with the charter schools. So I think that we just need to get the information and have us all on the same page so that all of us hear the same thing. And once we all hear the same thing, we can ask questions. And I'm glad that the charter school representatives are here so we can all engage in that conversation and make sure that we all understand and hear the same information to respond to.
I'm a little surprised, unless the 0.6 mil is a different subject, but board corporate had a consensus that we would entertain obtaining information from a workshop with all the charter schools. If you could pass around that. And
is air conditioning on here?
This is the same. Could you put air cool it down a little bit. And I was tasked with coming back with possible dates and an agenda to allow all charter schools to actually, in a forum we talked about in depth, because here we are at another meeting with staff doing lots of work, one-way conversations. This is a board discussion. And we had said we were going to have a workshop. I had the creative agenda, tentative date, but not a fixed date. That's really all we were looking at. I was tasked with putting together an agenda. Oh, did you not get one? And it goes over, it is a joint session with district and all charter schools. It discusses school presentations. They would receive the first sheet talks about, because there's a lot involved in this. And we talked about not making discussion, but I don't mind you bringing it up. I mean, I understand, because we get emails. But we were kind of, I'm just concerned because we were in the process of tackling this one by one. And so the board corporate confirms a certain date, which I listed tentative on the agenda for July 14th and or in the evening, which is preferable, I believe, because of working people. And the other one would be the July 28th, which we don't have a discussion in the morning. Invitations would be sent out to school and tentative would be tentative agenda. RSVPs receive back with added agenda items that they want to discuss, because we want that to and from information. Superintendent, which would be the new superintendent, prepares, obviously there would be, with the invitation staff, with Dr. Adams' direction, could start to prepare the information on the agenda that we would need. And obviously the new superintendent would be in place and be well aware of what's going on. The attorney could then prepare information directed by the board regarding state statute on capital outlay. And the drug testing issue, which is on the agenda, if needed, unless that compliance of drug testing by a certain charter school is resolved, because we discussed that we would talk about everything. It wasn't a part and parcel of different charter issues, and we were only going to tackle money that we're not giving them. We were going to also tackle some information and things that, questions and answers that we would need. There are extra agendas out there if the public would like some. I'm a firm believer. I have made some. If you'd like to see some of the proposed agendas, you could certainly put them on the back table if you would. But in any case, because that was one of the things we talked at the last discussion meeting, that we would make sure if we had handouts, we would have people see so they could see what they're talking about.
Sean, you should say
something. Oh, thank you.
Yeah. And so I put together that, and it certainly can be reworked by board. But it's a starting place of basically each school would have a school presentation, general information exchange. They would give us their five-year capital outlay plan presented to the board on that day. They would give disclosure of their state funding previously received for capital outlay. They can add any agenda items. And then we would go on to where our staff and superintendent would present to us district's budget and five-year capital outlay plan, presentation of surrounding counties' policy for capital outlay funding to charter schools, if any, how they share, presentation by the school board attorney on state statute governing capital outlay funding provided to charter schools and legal issues regarding the district funding. Also, at that particular time, legislation, new legislation, as you said, will have unfolded. The budget will have unfolded. Board's questions and answers with discussions, and then workshop adjourned. That's what I was tasked with, and I brought that forward. I know that the 0.6 mil is a different issue, but it's sort of part of the charter issue. So if we want to have staff go over this, that's great, but I still would want that reinserted into the agenda then with staff's stuff so that it's all transparent to the public, not just the charter people and not the district people, but all the parents, taxpayers, and stakeholders so they can see it. But anyway, that's where I thought we were at as corporate, but I do want to hear, since I don't want to short Mr. Morrison, since he looks like he put a lot of work into something.
Mr. Chair, thank you. Chair, board, staff, my apologies for being late. King's Highway shut down for some reason. You do that. Make sure you note King's Highway shut down, too. Just take your head that way. I do appreciate all the work that's been done by staff and board member Cynthia Care. Clearly, a lot has gone into this. I think this is perfect. I think the agenda is great, and I think we need to add the 0.6. However, I think that it would be better to have these conversations before we do our budget. I think maybe the Thursday in May, if we all the Tuesdays are booked up. But I do know that Dr. Rendell has been coming to a few things so far. So if we could make it sooner. And anytime in May, the legislature should be finished doing all their crazy wizardry. So it should be settled by then, and we should, in theory, have a budget, a state budget prepared by then and approved by then. So I feel as though this is the right path forward, and perhaps this could hold off.
If it's in May, it would have to be an evening then.
Okay.
And also, it would have to be contingent that Dr. Rendell is present, because I really do not feel that would be appropriate at all.
I agree.
The other thing.
What was that?
You don't know my country accent. Dr. Rendell. I need Dr. Rendell. I think it would be contingent that Dr. Rendell could attend. He has to be present.
Tell him to be here.
We don't have a contract yet.
At any time.
That's what I'm saying. We can't tell.
And he has another job. And sure. I think we have. Anyway, I had asked to talk, so
yeah,
go ahead and pipe in. The July 14th date will not work for me. We traditionally do not need those first weeks in July. So the July 28th would be a better day relative to your recommendation in terms of the agenda. I would really like to invite my colleagues on the board to recall the workshop that we had on our capital outlay expenses and recall all the needs that we have in our schools. I know that as elected board members, you have a very soft spot and a tremendous advocacy relationship with the charters. But I really would like you to think about the fact that when we heard about what our capital outlay situation is, it was made clear to us that we barely can handle the capital expenses for the charter school, for the local traditional schools, and we're not in a position to take money that is encumbered and that we've set aside for the five-year plan and that can be used to deal with issues that came up. I'm sure all of you received the email that we had in one of our schools, some damage to some equipment, and that's an unexpected, unbudgeted, unplanned event. So we need to have capital dollars to do that. I am totally supportive of moving forward with this meeting. I am very concerned that the board is looking at injecting any kind of expense right now into this budget cycle because we don't have the money to do it. And I will still ask each of you, which schools are we not going to fund adequately so that charter schools can get those dollars? They are all our children. They are all of our children, but they have allowances, and that's part of, you know, you can't say, give us flexibility, give us freedom, and then when we need money, give us money too, when the state isn't doing their job. And I know that we've received a letter of reprimand, you know, and, you know, shame on me for saying that, but I think that, you know, we're not entitled to our own personal facts. It is not our responsibility. And if you look at the legislation that's going forward, when they're asking school districts to share a percentage of their capital outlay, what's going to happen is whatever percent the state doesn't provide, by default, we are going to have to provide regardless of our needs for the remaining 15,000 students. So I'm all for having this conversation. I want to hear where each of our charter schools stands and what their needs are. But I'm having a hard time understanding how, after we heard about what the state of our capital outlay is, some of you insist that we somehow have a slush fund that we can use. And I would really love to hear from you guys as we have these conversations as to where you think that money is going to come from, because that's part of transparency. So I think we should allow Mr. Morrison to present the information that he worked hard on in staff hours, staff time, to give us all a level footing in terms of the information that's going to help us as we move forward with this future workshop. And I know that we can agree to disagree, but I think that we need to be able to listen to all sides and not come in with a pre-prepared idea of what we expect to do with money we don't have available at this point.
Sure. I agree with you 100%. We should listen to all sides. So far, we've only heard one. And we need to take care of our public charters. That's what they're called. They're called public charters, not just charters, public charters. If this district has agreed to do the public charter approach, so we need to do it. We need to do it properly. We need to take care of all, as you said, all of our children of the district. So I feel it's important to have this meeting to give everyone time to, you know, communication is always a good thing in my mind. We need to communicate. So, and the sooner the better, you know, to my mind. So let's have this meeting where it's not some strange scenario where they're sitting behind me. They have an opportunity to be engaged and present their side. So, I mean, we get the emails. We hear from Mr. Morrison in these excellently prepared reports here, the dire state. Perhaps there's a similar situation at one of our charters that we're not hearing about. You know, perhaps we need to weigh all of our, you know, look at it as a portfolio of schools instead of just, you know, bracket A and bracket B. Maybe there's one here that is in greater need that just happens to be a public charter. Or maybe there's one that is over here, you know, in that's quote-unquote a regular district school that has even greater need, and we identify that. But let's have that adult conversation. Let's let everyone have their say. Let's really look at this from an honest and objective standpoint.
Your point is well taken, Ed. We need to have a meeting sooner than later, number one. And what the legislature does is going to be a key point, whether we have the money or whether we don't. If the legislature comes down with a new law that says we will pay that difference, it needs to be, we need to have that budget cooking now. Mm-hmm. And this year's budget, because that law will take effect
July 1st.
I mean, yeah. if they pass it. So I'm not sure.
Could I make a comment?
Sure.
So I would agree that this is what the board corporate agreed to do, is to give the charter schools an opportunity to come forward and present information and so on. And the agreement was to do it after the new superintendent, but, you know, you are in the planning stages now. I did want you to know that the board workshop for ours is usually takes place in June. You know, we're going to look at the trim calendar later, and June 23rd actually is the workshop that we would come before you to talk to you about, you know, what the needs are. So it would be important that if we have any meeting that it takes place prior, you know, to that. because we're working. There are two different issues here. One is board has been getting letters regarding some of the issues around the millage. And so it's up to the board whether they choose to address that today or whether you choose to address it at the meeting. But if you're getting, I feel like there's some information out there that needs clarification. So today is to bring clarification, or the clarification can wait. It doesn't matter to us, but we're trying to address those issues that are coming before you and, you know, asking. So June 23rd is a date that we have on the calendar for a workshop to look at the capital outlay. So what I'm suggesting is that May is probably a good time to have Dr. Rendell come and work with us and you to get the information forward.
I don't have a problem with that, but we are missing a board member, and we did not have consensus. We had no consensus as board corporate to even hear Charlie. The consensus was to have a workshop in the summer, and that was what Mr. McCain had suggested. I would tend to agree with my board member that, you know, obviously we do want to hear everything. I don't know where we're going to report it. And I would never, ever be in favor, ever, I'll say that clearly right now, never, ever write a blank check for a percentage of a millage. Never. You will never see that from me. What I would like to understand, have some dialogue, and see, that's why and it was left up to me, and that is some of the, and I do not want to speak for the new superintendent, but I've had some conversations, that obviously they are all our students, but they have their own rules and regs and statutes, and that's part of the conversation I would have the attorney do. But for me, sharing of capital millage funds would not be sharing of capital millage funds. If they're all our students, then their five-year capital outlay funds become part of our capital outlay funds. And then the finance department will back out the funds that they receive, and there will be a portion or prorated funding for their needs with accountability and progress of that capital. Because if they are going to go under the umbrella of our capital millage rate, that by law does not have to be shared, and by practicability probably cannot be afforded to be shared. If we are going to sweep that in on the pretense that they're all our children, and they are, even though they're receiving their own funding, I'd be willing to look at that. I'd be willing to look at the whole picture, but I will never write a blank check of a millage. Me, personally, it takes, you know, obviously, but I would never do that. It would be we're all in this together, and it becomes a five-year capital plan, and it becomes the complete dialogue, and then it becomes, this is what was in the hopper, we had an emergency, our chiller broke, and we had to do this, and then they have to come and ask us maybe for additional funds, and we'd be glad to help them out, because their emergency is as important as our emergency. And again, with Protean, that's a lot of accounting craziness.
What does our contract say with that?
Contract on capital outlay?
On sharing the millage.
I'm talking the capital outlay. We don't. That's not addressed. It's not. There's a state statute that funds them.
Okay. We don't have anything.
They
statute,
get money from
any
the
rule
state.
In their contract,
and that's
that
part
says
of.
We will share the money.
No, a different.
It's a different bucket. It's PICO dollars.
FDFP money.
That's why you have to talk about the different buckets.
Right.
But for the capital outlay millage rate, that's a state statute that allows us to collect the max of 1.5 that used to be 2.0. There is a state statute specifically to the charter schools, and they collect money. I don't know how much they collected. I don't know if they're, and I will tell you, they are probably under-receiving. I would probably agree to that. And we could all agree to that. But they are receiving funds that we're not. So we have to look at the whole picture. That's all I ask. We need to be educated on everything. And I'd be glad to, as I said, look at all that. But that our students become our students in the capital outlay. They become, it's not them and us, as Ms. Jimenez said, it's us and them, but when it's the money, then it's our money. It has to be a cooperative. We have to have this dialogue, and this was a start. And, it has to be that way. And we had talked about, now there's an issue regarding one of the charters with
with drug testing, using drug testing as an admittance to school. And that issue, I hope, is resolved before this workshop. But that would come out along with every other issue we had, because we had agreed, and that was board consensus, for a summer workshop to discuss everything. So I know our peer is not here, Mr. McCain, and I would certainly, I would say over, you know, take a consensus today about moving the workshop up and hope that he can make it. But for May, and I think that would be good as far as timing, to discuss everything. And I certainly would want to hear, because that might give me there was a lot of work, as you said, and as you said, on the different bucket, Mr. Searcy, and I would like to hear about the different bucket. But when we have a meeting with Charter, it's a come to Jesus, we're going to roll up our sleeves, and we're going to maybe, you know, start with a little bit of this, but in the end, I hope it comes together and that we have a relationship, we have a plan moving forward. I don't know if the plan starts this year. I hope the plan is to move over in the future to a cooperative joint thing. And that would include, as hard as it is, but to share the funding, but in a way that isn't a blank check and that they're them and they're here, because we don't have to give them a blank check. It's not in the law. So if it's all of our students and it's all of our capital outlay problems and it's all in the same hopper, I'd be willing to look at that.
Well, I'm not a lawyer, but I can tell you that the facts that we always get here are the facts that we have. We don't have a clue what they're going to bring to the table. They have some good issues, and at some point, we're going to need to listen to them. That's the cooperative spirit we've been talking about.
That's on the agenda.
That's what we need to do, and I think sooner is better than later. Because of the budgeting issue and the new superintendent coming on and this new legislation.
Well, let's look at May then.
And I would say that Mr. McCain's not here today, but if you can get consensus today, we move ahead with it. If we don't, obviously, we don't get the nods or whatever it is that the chairman gets when he's in the seat, as a man, whatever.
He gets it. Judy makes it happen.
I think the timing of this thing is very important. And whether we agree or disagree, we need to get it all washed up here so we can.
So let's look at dates. Can we look at dates, and then also yes. The quicker we can get a response from Dr. Rendell? Because as we said, we don't have him under contract. We don't have a contract signed, and so we should be able to give him 2 or 3 dates.
So what we have on the 12th, we have an 11 a.m. workshop.
And we've just canceled that.
On the AMOs and the accountability?
Yes, because we have no data. We're gonna wait
right.
Until
and
we
that
have some work.
So
about.
Let's do it on, you know? Got a date.
You got a date?
May what?
May 12th.
We need the budget for the
workshop.
And
budget planner that's on the trim calendar.
They're talking about May 12th, the...
Yeah.
How about the evening of the 14th?
First, we were looking May 12th on the top.
Well, I was, but they canceled the workshop.
Oh, was that May 12th, Bruce?
Oh, okay. Well, that would be
at
hard
11.
If we can stay on the same day.
No.
But that may be difficult for Dr. Rendell.
Right, we have a 1 p.m. discussion.
Two options.
Is this a 1 hour?
Morning and an evening.
And do you think 2 hours is going to...
This is reviewing that.
Is that on the calendar, Carter? Or are you proposing
two and a half,
on
the
calendar?
The
school that are saying they're going to need time.
I think it's proposed.
Do you think Tuesday the 19th, which is nothing on the schedule for us in the evening?
Yeah, an off Tuesday
can't be better. And because
a
5 o'clock, what?
I'm out of town.
Okay.
What?
5 o'clock, there's a reception.
Does it have to be on a Tuesday? Or are you going to be here later that week?
Saturday will be good for me.
How about Thursday the
14th? Saturday?
Yeah.
I like Saturdays too. It's hard for staff.
Thursday the 14th.
Saturday's at 10.
Yeah.
That's at 7.
So we could do it.
Wait a minute, what day is it?
That's a Thursday, the 14th.
Thursday, yeah.
You're not here? How about Wednesday the 13th?
I'm here on the 14th.
Oh, you are?
I'm not here the 19th. I'm not here the 19th, 20th. I expect to be back the night of the 20th.
Thursday the 14th?
14th.
Whatever, yeah, sure.
So we're looking for, we said no to the 12th.
I think we said yes to 11 the 12th.
If he can make it.
Dr. Rendell can make it.
Yeah, but isn't there a 1 o'clock discussion?
Yes. That would not be the best day to do it, I think.
Okay.
And you're not...
Yeah.
I would say that may not be the best day. You've got a discussion, you've got...
we'd have that hearing for the...
That's right.
So well, we can, you know, it doesn't have to be at 11 o'clock. We could move it.
9:30? 8 works.
Yeah, I'm fine. Yeah. Well, not 7:30. Target's on the list. So, what would be a good time on the 12th?
Well, we have all the way till 1.
Yeah.
So, wouldn't 9:30 or not? You know, that's 9 usually
o'clock.
What? 9?
No, no.
SOP has been to take lunch. Right?
Wait a minute. We have to. We
not
have, tonight. Yeah. No, everybody. But we also have. We should come up with alternatives because of Dr. Rendell.
Right.
And also. Chairman McCain as well.
Okay, so
time station over there, so he's better.
Right.
Okay, so would that be our first choice if he's available? The
12,
May 12th at 9 o'clock or 9:30? Who had the 9:30 issue?
It's 9 o'clock.
Yes. Because it's going to
take just not 7:30. 8 is the
earliest. 9 o'clock. Okay, so that's our first choice. Our second choice would be the 14th, and you want to do it in the evening? Is that.
Yeah. How about 6? That'll give, if Dr. Rendell's working that day, it'll give him time to drive off. Yeah.
Okay, so May 14th at 6 p.m. And then do we want to have another?
Yes, I think we should.
Saturday, the 16th.
How about July the 14th? He should be able to make it with some of his age.
But remember, he's working. We might want to say Saturday.
I'm fine.
How about if I check that out today? Then if that's a problem, you'll know this evening.
Okay, perfect. So those are...
That would be great.
Okay.
Can you have Ms. Poistel call now? Talk to him? Find out if one of those two dates are okay with him?
Sure.
Okay. Are we going to be able then to hear the presentation?
Yeah, the question is, do you want to do it now or do you want to wait?
That's the point.
I think.
You want to hear it now or you want to wait?
I don't know that it's
2 to 2. Okay. Thank you.
That's fine.
Okay.
Wait a minute.
Where'd you get that?
2 to 2. 2 to 2 means that.
2 to 2 means nothing.
Wait a minute. I want to hear it too.
Well, that's 2 to 2.
Oh. I thought you wanted to hear it.
2 to 2.
Okay.
Oh, we're good. Okay. Thank you, Carter. Good job. Okay, Claudia, goal setting.
Okay, this is a calendar issue, so it's just to get your feedback since you have your calendars. You had asked me to get with Ms. Thang. She sent you the dates for the goal setting discussion, and it was, the idea was to have a goal setting discussion amongst the 5 board members. You know, because everybody has different suggestions of things that we want to do moving forward in terms of budgeting and programs and stuff like that. So one opportunity for the board to begin that conversation. And then the second part was an opportunity with the superintendent as a consultant and Dr. Adams as we transition to have the second goal setting conversation. So the dates that were emailed to you all were April 28th from 11 a.m. to 12:30 p.m. for the board to have our discussion on goals, and on June 16th for goal setting with Dr. Adams, Dr. Rendell, and the board, and that would be at 5 p.m. So those were the two dates that were sent out to everyone. So if that's fine with you, we'll go ahead and put them on the calendar. And then there was one more date, which was the date for the children's assessment presentation. We need an hour to do that, and the recommendation was June 9th, so that Dr. Rendell could be part of that, because that's really useful information, especially as we get ready to move forward with budgeting, to understand what's happening with children in our community. So those are the three dates for your approval, so they can be added to our calendar.
What was the children's assessment date?
June 9th. And that would be during our discussion session, so we could set aside an hour during the discussion session for that.
I have the opportunity to go before the county commission on this because it's something I've been working on for quite some time, and they have the wonderful position of having an unfunded mandate now too. So they have, they're learning what it feels like. So they have to get to 75% recycling by the year 2020, and they just this past, not today, but last week, funded a position of recycling coordinator for the county. So I'll expect that they, you know, their main role is to work with all the municipalities, and of course, the school district as the number one employer and number one holder of real estate in the county. We produce a significant quantity of waste. Another thing that's happened is they've had changes that will affect the school district, and Dr. Adams perhaps is planning on presenting this, but the hauler who currently handles our recyclables, Republic, did not win the contract and really has very little other business in the county over the next few years, so we may be in a position. I think it's an opportunity that we can restructure the way we're currently doing business and generating waste and actually transport recyclables using our own equipment versus having a contract with the company, if we are already committed to having those equipment and people on staff. But again, this is something that will probably require the staff to work with the county's coordinator. I just wanted to bring it forward to bring it to the attention of the board, and they will be requesting different organizations give a commitment to achieving that goal of reducing our waste stream, so or diverting it. So we may be visited upon by county commissioners in their meeting.
Isn't that pretty much a staff issue, though, to do all the research and get it?
It is.
Shouldn't recommend something to us?
It is. Yeah.
So I would imagine that their staff is probably already going to be in contact with our staff.
Absolutely.
To, you know, to find out what we're already doing and what does that mean in terms of what their goal is and where we are right now. So I would anticipate that Mr. Ehrman and Rick Chuma and that group will be involved in that. So I'll follow up and see if they've been contacted by anybody yet.
But they will be looking for our support, for the board's support.
I just have a clarification
policy.
Question. So are you saying that with this change, you know, with this group not having the contract, that your recommendation is that the school district use their staff and their vehicles to transport the... Did I hear that, or
no,
did I mishear it?
That,
that's why I'm clarifying.
That was... it's not my recommendation. That was just a thought that I had. Right, exactly. It may be an opportunity, it may not be. That's for staff to decide.
So we would want to know any cost that would
be absolutely.
Incurred.
Absolutely. Or saved, you know, through that process if we were to not have that contract any longer. But my main purpose in bringing it forward was that the county commission is going to go to the city of Bureau and to all these municipalities and ask for their support. So
it's a mandate for them?
It is a state. It is actually, it's in statute 403.706 that they achieve a recycling rate of 75% by the year 2020. They're actually supposed to be at 50% now, but with current efforts, they're at less than 40. So they have received a letter from the state basically saying, explain yourself, much as we would have if we had failed on an unfunded mandate or had 0.5 too many children in one class. However that's possible. So they, you know, it's a community-wide issue, and I'm just hoping that the school board will, you know, throw our support behind our county commission. And actually, it's a great way to reduce waste, and that's the thing. You know, it costs $8 to $12 million to open a 10-acre cell at the landfill. I mean, there are a lot of really good financial reasons not to have our waste go to the landfill. Not to mention it costs $2.5 million a year just to operate. So.
And then just as a follow-up, I think another important part of this is making sure that the recycling materials actually go into recycling and not into the garbage. Because sometimes things that should be recycled, I,
think that there also needs to be education. As the staff looks at this, we need to make sure that we are, otherwise that goal is not going to be met if we're not properly disposing of the recycled materials. I've seen sometimes.
A quick question that gave me some thought. What is our policy for shredding? And what are we doing with, obviously, student records are confidential, and if you want to, I don't know what the records retention is, but do we have, like, secured shredding company that we outsource to that takes that away?
Actually, I think we ship. Digitized records, or once it's digitized, yeah.
With regard to student records, the records retention schedule with regard to student cumulative folders, not discipline records and that sort of thing, but a student cumulative folder is the lifetime. So we never get rid of them. We shredding is not a good word in school board with regard to student records. We don't. We keep them. Now, they do digitize them, and so the paper would then be destroyed. I don't know what you do to destroy the paper, but the records themselves, they never go away. We have to keep them for life, and then they're stored.
So I guess my issue or thought would be if you have a paper that has confidential information, it's scanned and put into whatever software we're using, and now you take those papers and you put it in your recyclable bin, and that's being taken off to the...
How do that? I have to find out. Before, at one time, we used to ship them to another site for... Actually, I think it went to Tallahassee somewhere. I'd have to find out what that is. But there is a process for that.
Okay.
I'll find out what it is. I don't remember. I do remember that there is a process for taking care of that. But I appreciate it.
Well, that's not the only files that people store. I mean,
no.
Absolutely. You really don't want to get
anybody's hands.
And they actually do shred a lot here. I've talked with Javon. The hardest working man in the building here.
Yeah.
And I see him carrying shreds out to the recycling. And mm-hmm. one thing to remember is that that paper actually has value. Like, they turn it into toilet paper for Christmas. Mm-hmm. So they take it, they shred it, they press it together, and then they make it into toilet paper. And then the state buys it. So it does have a resale value. There's actually some, you could recapture some of that revenue.
A lot of uses for recycled paper. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay.
We saved just about 2 seconds. I just noticed that a new doctor just walked into the room.
Yes, he did. He just defended his dissertation this morning, and I actually went to go back into the room when the committee conferred his doctorate to him, and so Dr. Fritz.
Yay.
Did y'all get invited to the party?
Well, you know, they had to wait and see, right?
You want to make an announcement that we...
Oh, yes, we do. May the 12th is the meeting with the charter schools. Dr. Lindell will be here. Mr. Adams, hopefully the board. If that date might be agreeable to the charter. Now we have to make sure that it's agreeable to them.
We You're not
wait
going
for
to
an
use the
answer.
Same, they just better come?
Well, we have the meeting set, and I'm sure they can find some representatives.
Sure
I hope and pray. And that's at 9 o'clock in the morning on May the 12th. And I'm sure we'll hear from them very shortly on that. Let's see. Now, last item, user. Excuse me, I'm sorry.
Could we hear from any of the charters that are here? Mm-hmm. Why not? We can decide as a board. We can allow them to
on the date.
No.
I wouldn't need you today.
Why not? Excuse me. This is all of us. It's not your unilateral decision. My question is, if the charters are here, this board and a lot of you are always saying we don't let them speak. We don't let them speak. So we set a date, and why can't we ask them if that's okay for them? Instead of waiting until when are we going to meet again? That would be next month.
If that's not good, we won't be able to make the May meeting for them. Then you're saying sooner than later. And we are in, sunshine law, so if we don't want to let them talk, we can go by emails, and a lot of people can't make it. And
why don't we just try to
talk? Do you want to, that can be done by consensus now to ask if they have any feelings about it.
Discuss.
Mm-hmm. Please.
That's up to you.
No, if there are enough of us, let's just say, is that a good day for all of you?
And we'll reach out to the people that aren't, you know, to everyone with a letter.
Thank you.
An invitation, a letter, and a copy of the tentative agenda so that they can add things that they want. I'm sure they have a lot of issues that they have with us.
But it's all about capital, right?
Everything.
Oh, everything.
They can talk whatever they want.
I think the capital and the 0.6, right? Is that
the 12?
Well,
since that's what Carter works so diligently on.
Yes.
I would like to hear that.
That is on the agenda, but there also is an area on that agenda for them to, in turn, say that they want to say something. They might have some sort of issue.
Sure. All right.
And they can either respond to add to the agenda, or they're fine with the agenda the way it is.
Mr. Madison, I thought what you were trying to say is let them speak on all the issues about charter school funding today, so I stand on that. Use it or lose it is concerning vacation and sick pay. I understand that we've got a tremendous liability for the unused vacation time and sick days. And is there any way we can district policy, is there any way that we can change our policies to be that if you either use your vacation and sick days during the year or you lose it? Is that a doable? I don't know what the policy thing. I don't know if there's a law statute that keeps that from happening.
Just one thing, you did skip me. Because I'm only going by, and that's shame on me. But wait a minute, that's my fault because we used to not, whether we put it on the agenda or not, the chair would always check. I'll wait till the next cycle. It was just about the train resolution, and I'll wait till the next one because that's not burning. But in question to what you were saying, but next time ask me. I mean, next cycle. Because she has a lot, and I'll never get a chance. I'll just give you my input, and I know that you are like me out on the streets. Everybody's out on the streets, and the taxpayer side of it is, well, these big buyouts. I mean, I came from a town where they almost went bankrupt because of that. There was a $250,000 outlay because five people retired, and so that doesn't sound like a lot, but for that little town, it was. So I understand what you're saying, but
Are we talking about the issue you brought up?
I'll wait till the next cycle.
Oh, okay.
Is use it or lose it. I could just tell you from this point of view that we always think about teachers, and that's part of the pie in employees. But years ago, and continually, people get into government work. So your maintenance worker, custodian, office administrator, they're all historically took lower salaries to receive packages and benefits that outweighed that higher paycheck, but was, and just give you some background, because I really feel that I do know a lot about this, and I want to just prep so that we can have a full view of this. And so, you know, could you say the teacher, it's the teacher too. I feel teachers and officers and nurses and firemen, they have a calling, and sometimes that calling doesn't involve dollars, but it really does too. So I'd rather use just a regular worker because it makes my point more sturdy. So you have your landfill person who's making $12 an hour, but waste management, they're making $27 an hour, but the trade-off is vacation and sick time. So you have now switched to the teacher. So historically, people took these packages and these lower-paying jobs to have these benefits. That doesn't mean there's not abuse. That doesn't mean that maybe we're overcapped. That doesn't mean, you know, that we're over... they're excessive. However, to have moving forward to touch any past employee, someone who's worked maybe for the district for 25 years, they've got five more to go, and their husband and them, family medical leave, you know, and they have that bank,
wouldn't want to touch this. I can tell you my experience in other agencies and other government things. Usually you start, they do look at this, and they do start to create what they call a grandfather tier. And so it would be any new employee starting on or above, on or after. But you still have to, we have heard that our teachers and or our CWA workers, we just had in question about this, that they're not the lowest paying, but they're not the highest, but that's the pay. We're not sure of the full package. So even though we're in the middle, we may be very low if you put the package together. So all I ask is if we do look at this, and it should not only be looked at, it should be looked at periodically, so I agree with you and thank you for bringing it up, but it should be looked at with a magnifying glass and with a sense of fairness and with also, you know, I've even, not to touch anybody before, I've even heard people, know people to address this where they created banks, let's say 240 hours is the max on sick. And I'm just pulling it out of a hat because I can't really, all our contracts quote, so I'm just fictitiously saying 240 is max on sick. And then you could have a tier for past employees, which I don't think would go over right. I don't think it's fair, but there's even a way to look at past and say where you're at now, if you're at 190, you can't go past 200. We don't take anything away from you, but we don't. So there are ways to look at the whole picture, but we have to be very careful. We have to know what our surrounding counties are doing. We have to know what that full package is. And I think if we did take this approach in answer to the economy, in answer to the age of the future, and other counties doing it, that it's from a grandfather point of view where it's new, you know, I mean, it has, you've even said this, it has to start somewhere. So I would say we need to be very careful with existing contracts because I don't want to devalue an employee and I don't want to bargain away anything. And I think a lot of this would be at the bargaining table. So I think that it should be not only looked at, but looked at repeatedly after every few years to make sure that we're consistent with other counties and also with our budget. You can bankrupt, you know, if everybody just decides to put their papers in.
Yes, I think tied to that, one of the items that keeps getting tabled and we will be tabled again on, under my item, so Ms. Thane, can you please place it on the agenda for the next discussion, the living wage update? We should, I've been assured that we will have something next month. I think that the other part of that is recognizing that as the largest employer in Indian River County, as we make these decisions about what we offer in our packages, that we are mindful of what the living wage situation is in our community. Because when you look at what the government uses as an indicator, that is a number that is outdated and that is misleading. There was a recent report, the Alice study, that was done by the United Way. Indian River County was part of it. And when you look at what the actual cost of living is today, if, for example, we have 17% of people in Indian River County, and I don't know the numbers, I didn't bring the information with me, but you will get it when we hear the assessment presentation. If you have like 17% living in poverty, when you look at the real numbers and the real cost, it's more like 40%. And that's a good approximation to the actual number for Indian River County. So that is a that's why I've been wanting to get this information, so that we can look at what other counties are doing. But the fact that people are living in poverty, regardless of what other people do, is a reality for our community and the well-being of our community. So I think that is a piece of information that we all need to be aware of. And secondly, I think what you're saying is spot on in terms of thinking. When we look at all of the employees in the school district, the majority of our employees are our teachers. And as you said, teachers aren't in it for the money. But one of the appeals that we've had year after year for bringing in underpaid teachers is that they would have a good benefits package. And that has slowly been eroding. And we can make changes, but there is no line outside of Mr. Fritz's office saying, hey, let me in. I want to work and I want to be abused, blamed for all the problems in society, teach to a test, deal with this, deal with that. Nobody is knocking on our door saying that. So when we make these changes, we have to be realistic about there being people
that are going to say, oh, I'm going to work for nothing, and on top of it, I'm not going to have any or minimal benefits. And I know it's complicated. I know that we don't have the money to plug all the holes in society, but I think that we really have to be asking those questions, because, you know, we can say moving forward, we're going to do this for everybody so that you're not, you know, reneging on a commitment. But we have to be very careful, because how are we? We have a lot of people retiring. How are we going to replace those teachers? And that is a, you know, that is something that I know I will be paying attention to, because I share your concern.
I suggest we address it during the budget process, as it's a liability.
Like $9 million, I understand, you know, just for those, that piece. Nobody is, I mean, that's my thought on why we need to be discussing it. Because number one, it's a financial piece for us that's going to come back and bite us, number one. And we need to begin thinking about, our job is to look out for the finances of the school district. And we need to begin thinking and talking about it. And boards over the many, many years in the past have never discussed it, to my knowledge. And I just think that it's time that we need to at least discuss it. Issues come up where we begin any new person hired. It can start there, but it has to start somewhere. And if we're going to be responsible for board members, and I'm concerned about the poverty and all of that stuff, my responsibility is to take care of the finances of this school district. At least this board is, and this board will change. I know that, but we need to be thought of as being good stewards of the money that we're entrusted with. And
Could I suggest that you do have a workshop regarding this? Because, like you're saying, you need to understand all the details. There are statutes that drive a lot of what you're talking about. So I would certainly ask that you have a workshop concerning this and allow staff to bring information forward regarding what our liability is, what other districts, but also the statutes that will help us help you make decisions about that.
As we build our budget, will we set up a series? I'm assuming we're going to set up a series of workshops. And that
we
might
do,
be one of them. Or?
Yeah, that could be that. But usually the budget priorities are dealing pretty much with the dollars and what we need to do with them. So I think that the benefits that you're going to see are down the road. They're not going to be impacting tomorrow's budget or the next year's budget. So I think that just getting the information and understanding when you will get a savings.
And having it on the agenda is not taking away any days, sick leave, or vacation. That's not what it says. Use it. You have to use it this year. It should be the vacation days, in my way of thinking, are there to so that you can recharge your batteries and do your personal things you need to do. I mean, that's very important. And I really want to encourage everybody to take their days and get recharged. On sick leave, you know, if you're sick, you take your sick leave. If you don't, you don't get it.
Well, let me just explain to you. And I hate to say the government mentality, but people are people, and this is what you're going to do. You're going to promote sick time usage. Because if you allow a day a month, let's say, you are going to promote sick time usage. You're going to promote finding subs. You're going to promote, and that's just the way it is. That's just the way it is. It'll be a mental health day for some teacher to sit home or some custodian to sit home. The other thing I'm concerned, and that's why it's good to bring it up, but process-wise, this would be, so it's not like budget time, let's use it or lose it,
right.
Let's do it right now, and we're just going to, and all those people are going to lose it this year.
Right.
And somebody has
that's
6 weeks on
right.
Well, no, but what
right.
I'm saying is, what we need to know is, and then the attorney can answer, how much of this is collective bargaining? Because you can't just say that and violate a contract, breach a contract.
We can talk about anything, just discussion.
No, I understand, but that's what I'm saying. So that's something we're going to have to, we can talk about it, but then we're going to have to direct our negotiating team to negotiate it, because you could say all you want, but you know, that's why we need to know from our attorney, please, what is negotiable and what is policy only? And where do we start? And yes, a workshop would be. That might be, since
first
we're
step.
Flopping the May, a July summer workshop that Mr.
McCain had talked about, that might be a good, not on the 14th, but, you know, maybe the 28th of July to discuss that, because it's not a budget issue, because it has nothing to do with this budget.
No.
And we've got a lot in this budget. But it is an issue that we need to talk about. So I think that, as I said, I just want us to be very careful that we constantly, in one say, say we value our employees and then want to appear, even though it's financially responsible. It's not what you say, it's how you say it. I want to make sure that we want to value our employees, but we need to understand first ourselves how that affects morale, promoting sick time, what are the grandfather, you know, what type of formula, how will he approach this? So that was really, I think it's good that we look at it. I think it's very good that we look at it. Mm-hmm. And I think it's very good that we do it probably every 3 years.
So okay. Am I hearing the
women's attorney? The attorney is going to
July 28th?
July.
Do you want me to answer the question? I think the board has multifaceted issues to look at. You have a couple of school board policies that were adopted a couple of years ago that address specifically sick and vacation time and terminable pay and how that's calculated. So you have some policies. In both of, well, one is on your agenda for preliminary approval tonight, your CWA collective bargaining agreement. You also have your teacher union agreement. There are some provisions in there that would need to be addressed. You have a compassionate leave provision that is going to be in both of your collective bargaining agreements that allows employees to donate accrued time. You have a sick leave buyback program in both of your, assuming that tonight is approved, in both of your collective bargaining agreements that would also need to be addressed. I want to say you've got a sick bank. You have a bank as well in policy and in your collective bargaining agreement, so those would need to be addressed. There may be another provision that I'm not thinking of at the moment, but yes, there would need to be not only a conceptual discussion with the board on this topic, but then taking that information and then going back and looking at the collective bargaining agreements and your policies to see what we need to tweak from there. So, you know, by all means, get the ball rolling with the discussion.
And what statutes allow you to do and not do with current?
Certainly.
Earned vacation, basically.
Yeah, and actually, for the board members, the board has had this conversation in the past, and that's the reason why we have the buyback, because we have been talking about how to tackle this, and as you realize, it is very complicated because it affects all facets and so many policies, statute, you know, bargaining. So a workshop, I think, is really appropriate.
This is a pretty sharp board, and you should be able to handle it.
So maybe a workshop would be fine, but when we definitely today have consensus to have our attorney carve out each of those contract areas and the lists and the state statutes that address this and bring that back to us. We could certainly give our attorney consensus today to do that work for us.
She's getting the payroll, right?
No, I'm just offering that.
And we've done some
in the past.
So, yeah.
The other issue, school board rules can be changed, right?
Yes, sir, as long as we follow the rulemaking process, absolutely.
And is the bank that we have, and I'm not totally familiar with that, but the bank that we have, doesn't that expire every year? I thought I read something
no.
that those days, if I give two days to the sick bank this year, at the end of the year, it doesn't expire?
Mm-hmm. No, sir, it stays.
Maybe you just can't take them back. Maybe that's what it is, once you give them. Okay. Since I skipped over you a while ago, Ms. Sinchek, do you want to
So we're talking about a July workshop?
July. We got to set the date down. Yeah,
the end of July?
Say the 28th?
Okay. Yes, I think, if you don't mind, Chairman, just real quickly, we had the presentation from Phyllis Fry at our last meeting regarding the resolution and presentation resolution. We all, because I see everybody else's name on it, received an email from, you can't remember the woman's name, I'm so sorry because I don't have it in front of me, regarding this board adopting a resolution to support of against the training. Is that something I had received emails? I don't know if you all did. I also got a couple alone that I would bring it up at discussion. Is that something that we'd be interested in asking the attorney to draft a resolution? And if not, that's fine. I just.
You know, I don't think it's a matter of it failing or not. I just don't think that it is appropriate for school board to get involved in these hot political hot potatoes. That is just not a smart thing.
Wow.
You two don't have to say anything.
As soon as we're finished with your picture, letter.
And I understand. I just, again, when we receive things, I would imagine you would do it too, and that's fine. And we're going to take a pass on that, so that's fine.
That's okay. That's what this meeting is for.
Perfect. And that was the only thing. Thank you.
I do have concerns about the safety, but it seems as though the studies that have been done don't necessarily support my concerns. But I'm just being pragmatic. If we have to cross the tracks and there's a train that crosses a train two times a day, there's just increases. Six Sigma.
You still have a couple of items on here.
Yeah, I do.
Just one quick question. I do want to get back. Karen Disney
Brombach
sat on MPO. And we all, you know, each governmental agency, and that at the time we thought, just for history, it's not like we didn't think about doing it. That, historically, that was the way that went. And to continue with that, that's not a problem. The person who emailed me, I'll convey that. That was the forum, and that I know that they have discussed those safety issues, so I think we're covered. And we all think it's a concern of safety. But we had previously, and I guess that's the information I'll deliver, that's the board's consensus as to continue.
Yeah. I wanted to have an opportunity to hear from on our attorney in terms of the issue of the random drug testing. This issue actually came up when we were talking about our school policy on random drug testing of all students who participate in extracurriculars, and one of the board members asked, well, you know, we thought it was a great idea. Why don't we do this in both of our schools for all the kids? That makes sense. And our lawyer cautioned us, and so that made us question, because the way it was framed was, well, you know, the charter schools do it, not a witch hunt, nothing, just they do it, makes sense, good idea, we should do the same. And we were told, ooh, no. So what I want to do today is have our attorney explain specifically what is the policy or the statute that leads you to believe that we need to be cautious, that that is not appropriate, and what kind of liability does the board have if, in fact, this policy remains in place. I do think that, you know, we just need the information. Because I think if we're going to have dialogue, we need to be informed.
Can I just bring you up to date on a meeting that we had? Because
sure.
One of the things is you asked us to have a meeting with the Charter High School, which we did. Mr. Brest and I met with Mr. Waddell and Mr. Bursa regarding the issue. And gave them the information they had. Actually, they reminded us that in 2000 that the charter contract had been renewed, and at that time that language had been included in the charter contract. You know, we all found all the same appendices, and sure enough, it's in there, and they've been operating under what was approved at that time. I was here. Just newly coming in, and it was kind of new in the time of the charter, but that question was never raised as far as the constitutionality of it, you know, at that particular time. So I will say that it was in their charter, but when the discussion innocently came up in terms of, well, why can't we all do this, you know, that's when the board asked that we look into it, have the meeting. We did, and I actually called Mr. Waddell to invite him here today because we were going to discuss it. So Mr. Gressa can give you the the legal information.
Certainly. And just to refresh your memory, when we looked at what the charter high school was doing, it's actually two different components. There's a provision that requires a student to submit to a drug test prior to being allowed to enroll in the charter school. So that's kind of part one. And then part two is once a charter school student is enrolled in the school, there is a random selection process throughout the school year. And if a student or a group of students is selected for this process, they submit to a drug test, and upon the second, not the first, I'm not suggesting anyone's ever gotten a positive, but if it's the first positive random selection, there's counseling or some, you know, school-based interventions. And if the student is then tested positive in this random selection a second time, at that point the charter school unenrolls them, or, you know, whatever that word is that they use to say that they need to go find education someplace else. So that's a very brief, I'm sure there's more detail around it than that, but that's a brief summary of the policies in place with regard to the charter school. The information that I sent to board members and I also shared with the charter high school it takes the two components. Let's take the first component, if you would, all on its own, as far as pre-screening a student for drugs prior to allowing them to enroll. We look for that aspect of it strictly to the charter legislation. The charter legislation says, you know, students are eligible to enroll in a charter school except with regard to capacity. So there's a provision with regard to capacity. There's statutory language that says a charter school can target their enrollment, some performing arts or, you know, kindergarten, or, you know, they can target their enrollment to specific populations. I think there is a charter company that targets their enrollment to a certain segment of our exceptional ed students. So you can certainly target enrollment. So when you look at that language in the charter statute, none of it talks about screening a student for drugs, or, you know, that kind of a pre-screening. And in fact, it's not identical, but a similar issue came up a couple years ago involving the Lee School Board. That school board was made aware that one of their charter schools was, I don't want to say pre-screening, but requiring a lot of information from parents with regard to any exceptionalities the student may have that was trying to enroll in the charter school. Requiring whatever IEP or ESE information with regard to that child. And there was an extensive investigation done by the Office of Civil Rights, which is a federal agency within the U.S. Department of Education, and kind of the outcome of it was you don't pre-screen students. They apply. If there's a seat, they get in. After the student is enrolled, then you look at ESD or exceptionalities or learning disabilities. You don't do it ahead of time. So from that aspect of it, number one, that the charter legislation doesn't allow for this kind of pre-screening of students. If the student is otherwise eligible, you know, in they go. And then after the fact, I think then charter schools can then work on educational components for students. So that's, if you look at it in like two buckets, if you will, that's kind of the first aspect. And that was some of the information that we shared, you know, with the charter school representatives when we met with them. They were, you know, very kind to come in and kind of give us the history and how it got started and their internal processes for it. Secondly is the random student drug testing, which is very similar to what this board has had in place simply for athletics and then has recently expanded your policy to also include other competitive interscholastic extracurricular activities. And on that one, there isn't a statute I can point you to. That's case law driven. And you may remember in some of the letters that I sent, two U.S. Supreme Court cases that specifically dealt with random student drug testing. One was simply with regard to athletics, and another one, the U.S. Supreme Court expanded their holding and expanded it to interscholastic extracurricular activities, essentially competitive student activities. not just athletics, but performing arts or band or, you know, whatever else you might have. Brain Bowl, I think, was another example. With regard to those cases, the court was clear that they did approve of a random student drug testing program in a limited capacity. And both of those court opinions say, we're not approving it across the board, drug test everyone. We're approving it with regard to specific discrete populations. Now, as part of that conversation, and Dr. Adams may remember of this, when we were talking to the charter representatives with regard to the random, because we talked about the policy that this school board was considering at that time. This was a couple weeks ago. Mrs. Aversa mentioned during that meeting with the charter representatives that she, or I guess the charter board, I should say, not just her, required all students at the charter school, it was a requirement that all of them had to participate in the performing arts, I don't want to say club, that's not the right word, but the performing arts group, all of them have this requirement. And so my conversation at that point with them was, if this fits into that definition of interscholastic, extracurricular, competitive activity, and you just have the requirement that everybody's got to be on the football team, and that's what you do, you know, then I think that you can just add some clarifying language, that's what you're doing, and it meets the U.S. Supreme Court cases. You know, I think Mrs. Aversa just needs to flesh that out a little bit more, and, you know, with her school. If that's what they do, then, you know, by all means, then they've addressed the issue that I raised. But I would still have a concern about this pre-screening of students prior to allowing even them to enroll in the charter school based upon a drug test. Mrs. Jimenez asked about liability. Let's talk about liability for a moment. You have a charter contract with the charter high school. It's been in place for a while. Over the years since the late 90s when charter schools were first put into law, none of us really knew what the contract was supposed to look like, and so we did the best we could. Over time, you may have noticed that your charter contracts went from, you know, 10 pages to 50 pages. This charter contract has a requirement for insurance, right? So the charter school is required to have certain levels of insurance and certain types of insurance. One of the types of insurance is something called an errors and omissions policy, an E&O policy, which may, depending upon the lawsuit covered, may cover a lawsuit filed by someone with regard to drug testing of students. May. I think it would, depending upon, you know, what kind of coverage they have. So the charter school would have insurance coverage. There's another provision in the charter contract that requires the charter school to indemnify the school board if the school board were sued for something that the charter school did. The charter school is required to indemnify the school board, okay? And so they could do it either through their insurance coverage, if they have coverage for it, or they would have to simply come out of pocket. If they're financially viable, they would come out of pocket to do it. So from a, I'm going to say this via like a parent, I'm not assuming anyone's going to do this, and I'm not suggesting it, that if a lawsuit were filed by a parent, you know, I would think as the lawyer that we try to get it under one of the insurance coverages, and then we get something as far as an indemnification of the school board with regard to this lawsuit. But that's assuming it's just a lawsuit, you know, by a parent or someone else that has standing. That really doesn't answer the issue, kind of what Lee School Board experienced, if it is the Office of Civil Rights that comes. What happened in Lee, you remember the example I gave where one of their charter schools was pre-screening exceptional ed students. The Office of Civil Rights got wind of it somehow and came in to do an investigation. They came to the school board and said, you, school board, are violating. And the school board said, it's not us, it's the charter school. Go speak to the charter school. And what the federal agency said was, no, it's you. The school board is the one that receives the federal funds under the federal grants that we give. You're the LEA, is what they said, the local educational agency. There's a state educational agency, there's a local educational agency. And with regard to the federal government, it's the local educational agency. They understand our statutory structure, if you will, here in Florida, that we somehow have got these separate charter schools, but the federal government just doesn't care. They look strictly at the school board, and that's what happened in Lee, is Lee went to the school board and said, here's the problem, fix it. And the school board said, well, we can't, it's them and not us, and we don't care, fix it. So they got it resolved. I mean, they did ultimately get it resolved because people sit and you talk and you resolve things. But I don't think that with regard to this issue, assuming this is the student drug testing, if the Office of Civil Rights and there's 1,000 different agencies on the federal level that could possibly wish to come and chat with us about this, if one of those agencies came, you know, my first response would say, go talk to the charter school. But I know from that experience in Lee, they're going to say, we're not going to speak to the charter school, we're going to talk to you, and it's your responsibility, you oversee them. So that would be from a liability perspective. Again, we can go to the contract and say, well, charter school has to pay or they have to do these sorts of things, but you're the ones that will be sitting with the Office of Civil Rights. The superintendent will be sitting with the Office of Civil Rights responding to these things and trying to come up with some way to resolve it. So I think I answered the two. You wanted the legal basis and then you wanted some liability. I think if I missed a question in there, if you could just let me know.
Thank you. I think that really, you know, clarifies it. You're using a case that, you know, we're talking about a civil rights violation, and I don't know if you can equate this to a civil rights violation.
Yeah, it's a federal constitutional issue. It is the right to be free from an unreasonable search and seizure by the government. So it's a federal constitutional issue. So it would be akin to a civil rights violation. Yes, ma'am. I would agree with you.
Okay. Mr. Chair?
You know, we don't have any problem with requiring anybody that comes to work at this place from taking a drug for everybody. Is that a violation of civil rights?
Students and employees are slightly different. Okay, so we were talking about students. If you'd like to move over to...
I want to ask that question.
Okay.
We require people that go to work for this district to all take drug tests. Is that a violation of their civil rights?
With employees, it's a little different. There are specific provisions dealing with public education, and I'm going to use teachers and principals, school-based principals, as an example. There's specific case law that says that a teacher, instructional personnel, or a principal who are directly involved in the oversight of students, that we are authorized to drug test them due to the safety-sensitive position that they hold. You say all employees, yep. and I agree with you. In prior years, that was the policy and the practice of all school boards to do that. You may remember the last time you adopted policies, that rulemaking process, that big stack of paper, there were some revisions of your policies dealing with employee drug testing. More recently, there have been some case law that says safety-sensitive positions, yes, teachers, instructional people, principals, they must be. If you operate heavy machinery, if you deal with chemicals, bus drivers, yes, thank you, Mrs. Jimenez. But the case law has clarified, and that's what your policies, your recent amendments clarified, there are some positions that are not safety sensitive, and we need to carve out those positions, and those people would not be drug screened, but all the other categories would continue with that process. Yes, sir. A little different for employees. I'm sorry.
So upon this meeting, because prior meetings, Board Corporate was very firm about charter, revoking charters, how don't even want to get to that point, but how was the discussion on how they'll come into compliance? How were you informed at this meeting how they will come into compliance?
Well, I think the board has some options that, you know, you that you need.
No, I mean, how did they tell you? Did they tell you?
Oh,
we're going into compliance. We hear you. We didn't know. We're sorry. Because I'd hate this to go public that there's discrimination in our charter schools.
Yeah.
So, and that would be a public forum that I'm sure they wouldn't want it taken to. And I'm sure that it's just probably a misunderstanding. So I'm sure they told you they would comply.
I think that there are some, they interpret some of what we're saying a little differently. Okay, I think some of the conversation that we had in this meeting was they don't necessarily agree. Is that fair?
I would, yes.
They have legal counsel too. I mean, they have a lawyer.
Right.
I don't know.
Looking for any resolution. You know, I really think that Ms. Simchek has a point in terms of, you know, this happened in 2000, and from 2000 to 2015, there have been no lawsuits, no concerns. It seems like nobody realized the implications. But I think the challenge is once you know, once this meeting is taped and on the record, and this board is publicly aware that there is some kind of pre-screening going on that is akin to a civil rights violation, and that there is case law that contradicts a process that's going on, you would think that the response is, we are willing to work together and make sure that this is a win-win for everyone. I think that, sure, Mr. Searcy, everybody can lawyer up and you can get some mucky muck here to pay for your lawsuit and so on and so forth, but that really negates this conversation that we're having about let's listen to each other and let's work together. And I don't know what, you know, what could we propose as a board to move forward with this conversation, because what I'm hearing is that the charter schools are saying, no, we interpret this differently and we have legal counsel that will defend us on this interpretation. So is the intent for the board to say, oh no, we don't want to deal with it, we're afraid there's a lawyer involved, now it's going to cost us money, so we're going to just step back and let them do what they've been doing? Is that the responsible thing to do? I don't think so. To go into litigation, we always talk about we don't want to spend taxpayer dollars instead of in the classroom paying lawyers to fight lawsuits. So I would hate to see the charter schools make the decision that what you're going to do is lawyer up and have our lawyer deal with your lawyer, when it seems to me that this is not a witch hunt. Actually, for the record, I was not the one. You would like to think that I was the one that brought it up because of the perception out there, but I support choice with accountability. I would never want to partake in any witch hunt because I do believe they're all our children. I saw the charter schools yesterday at the Moonshot event at the museum. I have children that I work with that are in charter schools that I know that's where they are thriving and that's where they need to be. So for the record, I'm not against charter schools, and I would never have done that with that intent. But the reality is that we are aware that something is amiss, and I would hope that we could have a conversation and resolve this and not default to taking it to litigation, which, from what I heard Dr. Adams say, that seems to be the direction we're headed in, and that would be very unfortunate.
I would want to go further. I don't think a discussion and wait for nicey nice. You made a point. I want it to be nice. I would have thought the answer would have been, I'm sorry, I didn't realize it was a civil rights. I mean, it literally is discrimination. It's not the drug. I mean, I have talked to principals since, and they said, we've known this has happened for years. We get their rejects. They don't pass the drug test. We're stuck with these people. Because, and then why are they doing expulsions? When we talk about all our students, why isn't it all under our expulsions? Anybody expelled from our schools comes to our board. So we will have a time to have, we've set a date and we'll have a time for that conversation. But I don't care what the subject is. Our attorney has now publicly said, put us on notice, and we had even talked about this, and we had, if I recall, board consensus talking about this will come down to a charter revocation, and we don't want to go there at all. I just never expected this would be the answer, but not this specific issue, but we have been informed that there might be a civil rights violation. If a charter is granted to a school that has language that breaks a civil rights or federal law, and the school district, however, is still responsible, what is the course that a board could take? What would be, of course, there's some time for response. We have people here, they hear it, and I know they don't want to do that. They don't want to, in the public forum, look as a discriminating school, that they don't, you know, that they're doing things that the public schools, I know they don't want to go there. It's something that maybe there's a misunderstanding. But I'm sure they'll clarify and hope they come into compliance. And I really, once the children are in school, and if everybody has to be in the performing arts, then they have that safety net, as we do with that. And in the end, where will those students go? They'll come back to us anyway. And then we have to find a seat mid-year, and then we have to do all that. And that's the problem of logistics with having charter schools. But again, we have an issue. Doesn't matter what the issue is. We have been told that there's a charter school violating civil rights, that we could be slapped with a lawsuit. What would be the timeline and course of notification so that if those records are pulled by that civil rights agency to see that the school district is complying, what is the timeline and what are our steps? Not that we're taking them today. This is a discussion. But that could be an agenda item that I don't want to sit on a board that I can that I don't want to sit on a board that we didn't take action. So I would like to know what action would have to be taken if this school in question does not come back with a compliance.
There are provisions in your charter contract and in the charter legislation in order to terminate a charter school. And one of the provisions to terminate a charter and essentially cancel a charter school is for a violation of any state or federal law. So that would be the section, if you will, that we would go under. The law calls it a 90-day termination. It's not an immediate termination. It would require the school board at a public meeting to approve charges against a charter school for termination. Those charges would then be provided to the charter school, and I believe it's 14 days. Don't quote me. The charter school has a certain number of days to request a hearing if they wish to have a hearing. But there's a 90-day period where they have the charges in hand. There's some language in the legislation about a charter school taking action to cure the violation or the charges, if you will. At the end of that period of time, and assuming that a hearing was requested on the charges, then the charter school would have a hearing in front of the school board. It's kind of, I equate it to an employee termination hearing where the superintendent would explain, here are the charges for the termination. The charter school would be given that same opportunity to respond, and then the school board would then take action of whether or not to terminate the charter. Of course, after that decision is made, whatever that decision is made by the school board, there are appeal rights. So it could be appealed on to the District Court of Appeal, depending upon the outcome. That's a statutory process, if you will, in the charter legislation. In addition to that, with this particular charter high school, there's a provision in the charter that if there is a disagreement between the parties over the terms of the charter, that there is mandatory arbitration. So there's also a process, like a dispute resolution process, if you will, to go through with an arbitration hearing that's called for in this particular charter. And then thirdly, there is a statutory mediation process with the Department of Education. Maybe 5 or 6 years ago, this language was added into the charter legislation where if the parties, a school board and a charter school, had a dispute with regard to the interpretation or the implementation of a charter, that you could request mediation through the Department of Education. I've actually used the mediation services on a different type of a charter school question, and the mediator that I was provided for the issue was a lawyer from the Department of Education General Counsel's office who was very familiar with charter school issues, and I actually found her services to be helpful. She's very aware of everything, a new historical perspective and that sort of thing. So there's also that possibility, understanding it's not binding on anyone, but it's an opportunity to perhaps have a third party kind of be in the middle of things and to help steer conversations or steer issues one way or the other. So I think those are three possibilities, you know, depending upon, you know, what ultimately you would like to do. This goes a little off the statutory requirements, but I just offer it up to you. And in one of the letters that I provided to you, I shared that the Department of Education General Counsel, I think it was in 2001, it was in the early 2000s, had issued an opinion to the Sarasota School Board with regard to drug testing of charter school students, and the General Counsel's opinion had been that it was unconstitutional. I don't know how you feel about it, but I have made just a very brief, I named no names, just is there somebody that I can speak with about, you know, drug testing of charter school students, and there was someone that I could speak with. I didn't want to give details. I wasn't sure where we were going with this, but I just said I'd like to know you're available. I could maybe call back and get some, you know, help or some guidance or some input from the department on this. We may want to consider that avenue. Sarasota School Board did back in the early 2000s of saying, you know, here it is, what do you think, Department of Education? Perhaps, you know, we could do something similar, submit the question, the policies or whatever to the Department of Education with regard to this charter school. I never like to say we'll kick it to another agency to answer our questions for us, but it's an opportunity for someone that does provide guidance with regard to charter schools, and they have a large charter and choice department. So I offered up just as, you know, there are lots of moving parts. I'm sorry I've talked for so long, but I wanted to at least throw everything out on the table for you.
I would think that the thing that we need to do before we go to the federal government or whatever is to bring the folks in the charter school back and say, look, this is what we think the issue is. How can we work this out before we go to Tallahassee, to Washington, or whatever? You know, we talk about this communication piece, and I think we may be missing it if we try to go there before we go here.
Yes.
And I think that needs to be done sooner than later. The liability is here. It is on record.
It's on the agenda, okay. And so it's not resolved. If it's resolved before then, it can be taken off the agenda, but that's on the workshop agenda.
Well, and it may be beneficial to the folks at the charter school. Charter high school are very reasonable people, well, most of the time. Excuse me, Jean. But I think that they're also reasonable enough. They want to know their school stays sponsored by us, or whatever you call it, sponsored, part of ours anyway. So I think that we need to have, and I don't know if we give direction to the superintendent and the attorney to get with them and say, what can we do to get this taken care of? You got three or four board members that are very concerned about it, and we need to get it done now so that when we meet on the 12th, that's a non-issue. That's a non-issue. We only have one school that that's affecting, and that's Charter High School. So I would suggest that we do it tomorrow.
Okay.
Well,
okay,
no, you're not
that?
In town tomorrow. Though.
I am available at the discretion of the school board. If you need me to do something, I work it into the schedule.
What's that?
Do it.
Oh, well, we can do it now.
That's a little.
And thank you for that. And it's good to know that that's out there. We hope it never comes to that. We hope that it never comes to that, but it is a serious issue by this board because we have our hat on here. You know, I've served on a charter board. When the board that you're on, you serve, you wear that hat. If you're telling me it's a problem, you believe it's a civil rights problem, then it's serious to me. But, you know, this is what I hope we work out with the charter schools. I mean, I get calls from the public. So many students left this charter. There's mold. There's this. And I checked, well, who, you know, I want to know, do you have power over that? We don't. They're autonomous. And unfortunately, I have to tell them, that's not, you know, you bring it up with your school. You go chain of command. You talk to them about you think they have mold or your teachers are weak or whatever. So there's an autonomous, and what they're doing, it seems to be working. They're high performing. We enjoy how they're raising our grades. We're very, very happy about that. We want to have an open discussion and possibly work out some sort of formula for sharing funds. We want to have open dialogue. But we also want them to realize that in the end, we're going to be held responsible in this particular issue. Like you said, it is one school. It's on the agenda. It may be taken off the agenda if there's some sort of terms that the attorney feels that we're protected by before this meeting. But if it comes up, Chairman McCain will be here for that workshop, we hope, because we kind of set the date without him. But, but he'll be here. We'd have the forum to discuss it, and then we also then know it comes. I agree. We don't want to go anywhere, but it is a serious. It's something that we had when we first asked her to speak to them, that we felt serious enough. There was talk of charter, you know, where will this go, if there's a this. We don't want this on any issue, and certainly not this.
Well, I understand that Mr. Waddell has been invited by our superintendent to come speak on this issue only. And, Gene, if you would like to join us up here for a couple
minutes. May I bring my counsel with me?
Absolutely, his mother.
Thank you. I feel like we've been convicted and haven't had a trial yet. So let me... And Cindy and I try to set the record straight. I think both Superintendent Adams and Ms. DeGrasta did a very accurate job of our conversation. You ask how it ended up. We agreed to disagree. The particular case law that was cited in the letter, we don't think is pertinent to this issue. And that's a matter of interpretation. She thinks it's one thing. In the opinion of the people that we've talked with, it doesn't preclude us from doing what we're doing. It doesn't say you can't do it, which leaves the door open to say you can. The reason it is agreeable to our students is because they sign an agreement saying that they agree to be drug tested coming in. Their parents sign it saying they agree to be drug tested coming in. They must test negative to get in. Once they're in, then we have maybe 10 randoms a year, and if they test positive the first time, they go into a substance abuse counsel program. Mandatory attendance, mandatory testing by them, by the substance abuse people. And what we try to do, obviously, through that program, is to get them to get off of whatever got them in the program. They are still students at our school. We don't kick them out. I believe, if I'm not mistaken, unless it's changed, you have a zero drug tolerance policy, which is more severe than what this policy is. At least we give them a second chance. When it comes to the liability, our policies, as required by the charter, include Indian River School District as additional insureds on that policy. So our policy not only protects us, it protects you in all these situations if something should come up.
What policy? What policy?
The liability policies that are so concerning. So we have you covered if this situation should come up. I'm not quite sure that the ESE, because that's a specific mentioned in the law type situation, is the same as equating it to a drug testing issue. So I would totally discount that. When you look at what the public might think of this, in 15 years, we have never had it questioned. The parents accept it, the students accept it, and we're down now to probably one or two a year that with that second test end up going back to their zoned high school. So it's not this huge influx of people going away. Where are they going with that? With the sign, I know where I was going. Your policy that you just broadened to include, I don't know, half, maybe more, of the student body of Vero Beach High School. And you'll notice for a couple of days prior to your meeting, there were articles in the paper, school board's going to take up this drug policy. How many people did you have show up to talk against it? Zero. Nobody. The public is very accepting of this. The parents are very accepting of this. The students are very accepting of this. And we don't do it to catch people. We do it because these kids have pride in their school, and we do it so that they can say, no, I can't do that this weekend because I might get caught on a random on Monday, and I love my school too much to get kicked out of there. So when we have this agree to disagree, we do have the arbitration provision in the policy. There's no talk of lawsuits. And the way we left it was, if y'all push this any further than where it is right now, we'll just call for a formal arbitration and see where it goes. But nobody's going to sue anybody. You're not going to sue us. We're not going to sue you. But we do disagree on, one, the legality of doing it, and certainly the effectiveness of what it has done for our school.
I don't think there's a question about the effectiveness of it. And in 15 years, there's not been a lawsuit or anybody question it. Today is a different day.
I understand.
It may happen. It may happen today.
And, could be.
And when these things
That's why you have insurance.
Out, well, that's why I have insurance, and that's why everybody has legal counsel. But I think it's, since we're ultimately responsible, I think we need to talk about it and try to resolve it in some manner before Johnny's mom decides, hey, wait a minute, I can sue these guys and I can get money or I can get something. But it needs to be, I think it needs to be addressed. And from what I'm hearing you say today, we're not changing our mind.
That's what I'm saying. It has been a very effective policy for our school,
and like
we intend to stick with it.
Excuse me. Okay.
So, you know, I think hearing both sides, I think maybe what we might want to do is get a DOE opinion, because that is not going to take us to it's not going to be saying we're going to go to arbitration, mm-hmm. we're going to go to mediation, but we're going to go to the Department of Education and get their opinion, so that if in fact your perspective is the interpretation, you will be fine. And if it isn't, then we will have to have a serious conversation about how you all are going to be in compliance. And I think that it's not punitive. It's not, you know, it's just the board making sure that we're doing what needs to be done in terms of the responsibility that we have.
Fine. I can agree with that. I mean, I know you have a responsibility, but we just have a disagreement as to the interpretation of those statutes and in those case laws.
That's what that piece right there, I think, mm-hmm. would do, Gene. I mean,
obviously, even if there's a provision in the statute, I mean, in the charter, that is contrary to state statute, it's null and void. I mean, state statute is going to trump whatever's in the charter. And a general counsel is going to trump what's in there, probably.
How about mediation with general counsel?
Well, let's see what they have to say first before we begin to mediate.
I don't know. Who is general counsel? I mean, who is that person?
Well, now,
do you know?
Let's let Suzanne and I both go up and present it.
Right. So.
I think I'm hearing the board because we, and that's all it is. It's a protection. But for me, it's not only protection. When I hear that the parents agree, so it's okay. All the parents agree and the students sign that we're allowed to spank them. That's right. That's good. Isn't that okay? We couldn't do that. And if it's all supposed to be our schools and it's all supposed to be the same policy in general regarding civil rights.
It is not supposed to all be the same policy.
Regarding civil rights. Then this is where we disagree. Agree to disagree. But I'm just telling you my personal. You gave me yours. And I'm just saying this is where I stand. I would hold that the same as spanking. I would hold that as I can particularly select who I want in my school. It's not the after fact of the curriculum with the performing arts. That's how I feel. Feelings aren't facts. What we're going to try to do is fact find and get an opinion. And I would agree that that's the most cooperative way, because if the Department of Education came back with a different opinion or a third opinion, we should hear it. And that's, you know, again, like we all have a piece of the puzzle. We all have a feeling, because the lawsuits and the courts are full of feelings, especially in, you know, divorces and property assignments. But that's your feeling, and I respect that. That's the way you feel as your school policy, and that it works for you, and that because they signed off. I don't feel the same.
There is state statute about corporal punishment. There is no state. I understand, but you're mixing apples and oranges here. There is no state statute for drug testing. That's what we're relying on. That nobody forbids it. Therefore, we can do it.
But if you're talking about feelings, that's how I feel. It's wrong.
Fine.
And if it is wrong based on my feelings, but not by civil rights, oh well. There's some people that believe in Common Core and don't. Those are feelings. I'm just telling you my feelings. I feel that it's violating. I feel that it's not right, but that may not be lawful or factual. And I will side on what I feel the attorney has presented and the Department of Education has presented, and the chips will lie where they go. And I think the board is basically saying we'll do everything we can to see that we're either complying or not complying, or with a liability.
We're all under an obligation to be legal.
And I respect that.
If legal says that we're wrong, then we're wrong. We make a change.
Yes, ma'am.
Yeah, and I think what it goes back to in terms of that feeling is that perception of pre-screening. Because we want access for all our children. And you know that one of the issues we've had, and not just, it's not in Union River County, in other charters, it's that access issue. So pre-screening students does not fit in with the mandate of public education to be accessible to all children. That is my, as you said, that is my feeling, that is my interpretation. You can agree to disagree with me, but that's kind of where I'm coming from. I do not support any pre-screening for our public schools.
Well, in 15 years, we've had 9,000 sets of parents come through and say, we agree with this.
That's wonderful.
We're for it. This is semantics, but somebody mentioned the word expulsion. We cannot expel a student. Expulsion is getting them out of the system. All we can do is dismiss from our school. Then they go back to a regular zone school, so they're not deprived of an education. They just can't do it at our school. So I just want to clear that up before.
Mr. Gustin.
Yes, sir.
When you go to Washington, you go
Washington.
To DOE, you go to, I know Mr. Smith is there. When you go to this other, wherever you're going to go, are you going to the Office of Civil Rights? Are you going to the Department of Education? Or who do you get? Since you've indicated it's a civil rights violation, where do you begin your search?
The opinions that I mentioned, the Department of Education General Counsel opinions that I mentioned, those came from the Florida Department of Education General Counsel's office. So if it's the wish of the board, I would go back to that department Department of Education General Counsel's office here in Florida, and just remind them of the opinions that they've issued on this issue. Provide a summary. I think probably what I'll do is I'll just provide copies of the documents that the charter school has put together with regard to their student drug testing, both for the pre-enrollment and then the random, and submit the question to them whether it is constitutional for a charter in the state of Florida to have this kind of a program. And
will those people that you said were going to come down and charges with civil rights violations, they're going to come down from Tallahassee, or they're going to come down from Washington?
The Office of Civil Rights is a department in the U.S. Department of Education. I was not planning to call them.
We want the final answer.
Not the U.S. Department.
There are rulings from the General Counsel, the Florida Department of Education General Counsel. This has come up before. There are cases that can be cited and addressed. This isn't the only school, and I think they have had experience with it. In the experiences that you had in speaking with the individuals, they were able to respond, and we are satisfied with whatever their response might be. And I think that that is the easiest course of action, because they have had these kinds of experiences with charter schools. We are a school of choice. There is an office of choice in Tallahassee, in the Department of Education. We correspond with them on a regular basis. And I would like to make a point. As a school of choice, every single individual within this county who has a student entering into a school system has an option, just like they have their options in magnet schools. Magnet schools have specific criteria for their students in terms of volunteer hours and other things that they put in place in order for a student to attend. In a school of choice, there is a unique foundation, and every parent who comes into an orientation, and they must attend an orientation before they receive an application, has all the information presented to them at the very beginning for them to make an informed choice and decision for their child. But I do feel that, would like you to know, my opinion is that whatever is clarified or concluded through the Florida Department of Education, I would feel that we would be more than happy to honor.
That's where we're going. Right.
Yes, sir.
Thank you. Oh, Sean, you didn't speak up.
I didn't. One question and one curious comment. Would this be binding or non-binding arbitration? That wasn't expressed in the contract. Is it binding or not?
In the contract, it's binding arbitration.
It is binding. Okay. Thank you. When I was teaching, I remember something about backpacks and Fourth Amendment rights. Right. If a student comes to school with a backpack, and I'm concerned that there's something in that backpack, as far as illegal search and seizure, mm-hmm. Isn't there something, some sort of exceptions for that? And I know that when I fly to Washington, I voluntarily take a minute and allow someone to take my shoes off, pat me down, because I want to be safe on that flight. So I know that there are opportunities where, you know, we can sign away our Fourth Amendment, not necessarily, but through mm-hmm. through contract to. Mm-hmm. So I just wonder about the back,
the
you know,
and language.
And again, like the DOE, no one bats 1,000, and I would like to hear another maybe opinion, and maybe we're not getting case law in support of what the predetermined position was. So I'm glad that we're going to the DOE, but as far, do you know anything as far as like the backpack and Fourth Amendment rights and things like those lines?
With backpacks. With regard to students and discipline, the legal standard, if you will, to implement discipline at a school is if something has happened and there is a reasonable basis to believe that the information is in the backpack, a school or principal doesn't have to go get a warrant to go look in the backpack. The principal, the school official, has the authority, and this is case law driven, not a statute that I can point you
with
to.
Reasonable
that's
suspicion.
What I
with,
yeah.
With reasonable suspicion. That's a more criminal or penal right. standard. It's reasonable suspicion at a school, for public school, to look in the backpack. I think the rising issue that we're all dealing with is with regard to cell phones or tablets.
Right.
There is more recent case law that, with regard to schools, that if the, and the example is always given that little Susie is selling drugs with texting on the cell phone. So if that's the allegation, the principal would have the reasonable suspicion to take the cell phone and look for the text message about the selling of drugs by texting at school. But I don't have the authority to search through pictures and emails and everything else that's on these devices. You have to really target what you're looking at. Now, law enforcement, it's
right.
a different story. It's a different story. And case law regarding cell phones and electronic communication is still emerging. So, but that's kind of where we are today. So there are some differences with regard to, but it's usually in a disciplinary. You know, we think you've got pot, and it's not legal here yet, so we get to search
yet.
For it.
Yet.
Yeah. Okay. Okay, so that
it comes up every year.
That's it does.
Eventually.
Well, it depends on if it's... Anyway.
I took you down a bad road. I'm sorry.
But so there is a lot... I mean, this is a very gray area is what I'm hearing, that we really should be reaching out to get some other opinions.
Yes.
Is that... I mean...
And we're going.
Okay.
Can I just one last thing?
No, you'll have that by Wednesday.
What time is it?
And I'm not sure that, and I don't know that we could or I could diminish the rub, but I do want to try. Put yourself in our shoes or my shoes as a board member, that through a casual conversation this comes up, and our attorney says, oh, this could be a civil rights violation. We contact you. We all have different feelings about our feelings. As I said, feelings aren't facts. You know, and I'm entitled to my feelings. But the real fact is our lawyer put us on notice that this could be a possible problem. We just want to research it. If it comes around and we chase our tail around the tree and it says, hey, they're fine and that's within their rights, you know, that's fine. The way I feel is if it's a private school and it's St. Ed's and they have drug testing and somebody's paying tuition and they want to do that, that's fine. I don't think it's right in the charter school of choice, in a charter school of choice. That's my feelings. As long as I'm legally covered as a school board that you can continue to do that, I don't have a problem with it in spite of my feelings. And that's really the only, I just want to decrease the rub that we were putting, kind of that's how it came up and that's where I'm at.
You had some issue you wanted to bring up to us,
No, it was just in response. There is case law, and there is language in regard to random drug testing, and basically the practice, and I think that you did this Veronia School. That
mm-hmm.
was one of the cases that you
mm-hmm.
did, which basically said that the policy are that children who have been committed to the temporary custody of the state as schoolmaster, and the school being schoolmaster, the state may exercise a degree of supervision and control greater than it could exercise over free adults. And this was in a ruling of one of the cases that was cited in regard to drug testing in schools. But we understand completely. We would be in the same situation in terms of anything that would come up where we would have question, we would want to be informed, and we are more than happy to move forward. I'd say.
and it's a different side because it didn't sound like that from you know, we just got a factual report of the meeting and not a, we're willing to mm-hmm. go the extra mile. And
we
so
appreciate
I thank you.
The opportunity to speak to be able to clarify as much as we can.
And so, you know, one thing that I wanted to say as we close this conversation is that, you know, this has been a long time to have opportunities and we're seated at the table and you are here to have that opportunity, to have that interaction and that conversation, because the point was excellently made. What we heard were just the facts, and we heard it in a certain way. We each interpreted through our lens, and your response and your arguments flesh it out for us. And that's the part that we need as a board to get better at doing with a lot of the issues that come before us as it is appropriate. You're the experts in your school. We're not. We hear it. That's what they said. They heard you say, and it's wonderful for us to hear it directly from you, because he said, she said,
you know what they say about triangulation. So thank you. And thank you, Chair.
We appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Okay.
No, I'm good. Mm-hmm. I'm good.
Do you have
anything?
Sure. I'm passing.
Okay. All right, so this is my last item, and before I bring it up, I want to make sure that we can agree that this is not about whether or not we support FAHSAA. You know, that is a different issue. That's not what I want to talk about right now.
We need to talk about that one day, too.
Yeah, at some point, but that's not what is on the agenda. What is on the agenda for me is the sanctions. The sanction. There was a sanction to one of our high schools, and it has been brought to my attention that there is concern that even though the person that was sanctioned was given a letter and FHSAA responded, it was put in their file, whatever, there are some concerns I'm hearing that is not being followed. And so what I wanted to ask today was, when these types of situations occur, number one, what is the process for following up and making sure there's accountability to whatever the sanction was? And number two, there have been quite a few incidents at one of our high schools. What is the role of the athletic director in all of this? Because one of my concerns is our principals have so many responsibilities. If they have an athletic director, you know, what is happening there so that everything doesn't fall on the principal? I mean, the buck stops there, but, you know, what is the role of the athletic director? So what is the follow-up process, and what is the role of the athletic director in general to avoid future sanctions?
And I asked Mr. Fritz to come to the table simply because he has been working with the school, you know, regarding this, and he can give the background information.
Dr. Fritz.
Dr. Fritz. Thank you. Oh, excuse me. Dr. Fritz.
So, with regards to the recent sanctions from the Florida High School Athletic Association, there were some requirements they set forth in order to have the fines reduced. The school has indicated they plan to avail themselves of that and follow the requirements from the High School Athletic Association with regards to retraining of the coach and working through that. So I will be following up with the school to make sure that that has happened and occurred.
And we have no reason to think it won't.
No, of course. And so they will be communicating with the High School Athletic Association once that process is complete so that they can make sure they're fully compliant. So with regards to the role of the athletic director and the principal, as you said, the buck stops with the principal. Obviously, the principal is the person that we hire to be the leader for the school and the person who is accountable within that sphere of our organization. Obviously, the superintendent is accountable at the top level of the organization. However, the role of the athletic director, obviously there's a job description there, and depending on the way the principal wants to administer their authority, they may have a somewhat different degree of obligation. And this is actually something that we're still trying to sort out a little bit at this point. Currently, the athletic directors at the high schools are represented by IRCEA, so they don't really hold a supervisory role in the school. It's a quasi-leader role. They don't directly supervise or evaluate the other coaches in the school. We have had some conversation regarding unit clarification with IRCEA and are proceeding with those conversations in good faith, both parties. And one of the topics of conversation is the athletic directors, which may change that piece to make it so that they may be able to operate in a more clear supervisory role. We don't know. We haven't yet gotten through all the details on that, but that's something that we're looking at. We did at Vero Beach High School this year, together, the principal and the human resource department, we noticed there were a number of concerns coming from parents out of that school in the previous year. And so in the summer training they did for coaches, they did retraining regarding the Florida High School Athletic Association requirements, which are deferred to by current board policy. And so there was additional training and clarity around what those requirements are for the coaches at the school. And also in the sports where concerns have been raised previously, there has been additional supervision of the coaches and the players in those sports by attendance of both the athletic director but also the principal and assistant principals at athletic events and also practices. So in those particular sports where there have been some concerns, they've increased their supervisory role there. So I don't know if that fully addresses your question, but that's...
Today, the principal is responsible.
Yes, because the athletic director, their non-supervisory role, they do operate not unlike a dean of students, where they do have some sphere of influence that might be not the same as a typical teacher. But when push comes to shove, the athletic director might be the person who intakes information from students or a parent, but ultimately they can't be the one who administers discipline for the coach, because that would need to be the principal in concert with the human resource department. I also will say, and Ms. Jimenez, you and I have discussed this a little bit, we have increased our partnership with the schools and the human resources department to make sure that if a concern is raised with the athletic director and or principal at the school that appears to be a violation of either school board policy or Florida High School Athletic Association procedures, because they're delegated by board policy, they are to work in concert with the Human Resources Department and not take on that case in isolation for a number of reasons. One being, when you have a single point of contact, you ensure consistency of discipline for employees if discipline is necessary. We don't want a disparate treatment situation if discipline is administered. So we want a similar infraction and a similar situation at one school to look like what it does for another. And the only way you ensure that is by having a central place, a point of contact for that, which the Human Resources Department serves as. Additionally, our department works to make sure that we are not at risk of violating any laws or any procedures or any other policies. For example, we have policies about retaliation. Well, we need to make sure that we're preventing that and communicating about those pieces. There's rights to union representation. We make sure that we adhere to that. We make sure people have due process. I mean, we do all of those things, and we help do the checks and balances for the school on that. And in some cases, it may be that the principal or an assistant principal is the point person for doing the investigation or even working on the discipline at the school. But it's always in cooperation and concert with the Human Resources Department so that we make sure that we're doing it properly and don't have to either... so that we're not unfair to the employee, but also so that we're consistent with what our policies, procedures, and requirements are.
In both instances, an assistant principal is kind of the middle person to work directly with the athletic director as well.
Yes, so one assistant principal at each school is delegated to work with athletics.
And I just have a follow-up and a comment. I think that your description of the situation draws attention to the challenges of site-based management. So where do you draw the line in terms of when are you in compliance district-wide, because that's our policy, and when do you have the flexibility understanding your culture? And I think that that's something that this shows needs to be tightened up, because that is one of the consequences when it's not tight. My follow-up question, though, is if the athletic director has no supervisory role and the AP is the middle person, with the principal being ultimately the person that is responsible, athletics being such an important facet of what schools do, who evaluates those coaches? I know that they don't make a lot of money, it's a stipend, but there is so much investment in athletics. And there's so much character building and so much learning that goes on with these athletics events. Who evaluates these coaches?
At the end of the season, the athletic directors, in concert with the principal, they do a postseason evaluation. So they they survey students. They do a random sampling of students in each of the teams at the school, and they get that information. They also look at the information they've received from other sources, be it In this example, if there are parent complaints and they've been investigated, any other data points that they have, also coaching techniques, things like that, they analyze those and work together. We do not receive formal written evaluations for the coaches because it's a supplementary position. Most of our coaches actually are teachers within our school system, although some are outside coaches as well. So there isn't a formal written evaluation performed, but there is a feedback loop for them. And there is also the annual situation where they can be non-renewed because they're at-will employees. So at the end of the year, if it isn't working, and through that process, the principal and the athletic director and the assistant principal can say, we're not going to continue down this path, or we're going to continue, but here's the changes we need to occur, or we're going to sever the relationship and try to go to a different path. So we have all those options available to us, but there is a postseason review process. We might benefit from having it becoming more formalized, but recognize there's also a workload implication with that. A typical 8A high school has a lot of coaches, assistant coaches, that sort of thing. When you have multiple levels of teams, we haven't really looked at a written evaluation system for that. Recognizing that the system we have now does have some accountability measures built in. My understanding is they do it after the end of each season, and they seem to have been doing it for the last 2 years. I don't know what it was prior to my arrival. I just know that's what it's been since I've been
here. Because I've known a lot of athletes who've never done any survey.
Yeah. Well, and I'll give you an example. In each of the sports from last season, there were 4 athletes from each team that were selected. So you might know people who didn't get surveyed, but they chose 4 from each of the sports, and there are multiple sports at each high school.
Last question.
How, student athlete had some issues with the coach, didn't allow them to get water or all different things. They fill out the survey and sign their name, and their coach may not be removed next year, and they're worried about play time. How do you get around that? Why are they not anonymous?
So the surveys have been anonymous.
Oh, yeah.
We know which students we surveyed, but we don't know which student answered which one.
Yeah.
Yes. I will say, so they are anonymous. It could have been one of the 4. And I've seen some of those evaluations, in feedback loop from the students. In some cases, you have follow-up questions that you want to ask. If they, gave an answer that indicated perhaps some concern or even compliment regarding the coach, and you don't know who it came from or whether that's a pervasive feeling, you might invite some other players in to learn a little bit more or dig a little bit deeper. And I know they do that at the schools, but there are no names on the surveys, at least the ones I've seen that have come to my office.
I think the good news is we have hundreds of students participating in extracurricular and athletic programs, and we have very few issues. And I feel like we've actually had to ask people to tighten up their procedures, and they're doing it, and I think that's making a difference, and working along with HR. So.
Next item on the agenda is board committee reports by Mr. McCain. He's not here, so we're going to move on to, we can do that tonight.
Okay.
Ms. Adams.
I do have one thing. Mr. Where's Carter?
I'd like to call on her. He stepped down. Just a second.
Okay. He wanted to go over the trim schedule with you because there is a time in July where he needs that you can't meet, so he wants to get some feedback from you. So as soon as he comes back, we'll go over it.
Special privilege?
Yeah.
Thank you.
Parade rest.
Parade rest. Fall out.
Is Matt expected tonight? Or?
Yes, he'll be here tonight. Yeah, today is, I had to go sign my tax return today. So.
Oh, that's right. That's tomorrow.
It's
October.
No,
for me.
Thanks. Who cares?
Do my corporates in September.
No. So he said he'd be here tonight.
Great.
Today is a little bit much.
Not that Mr. Searcy's doing cool jobs. The whole board can get together. You can still chair.
We're ready for you, Carter.
Yes, sir.
We don't have all of us, but those of us that are here.
Yeah.
I think this is Jeff. This went to the ladies' room.
I'll leave it.
Claudia's not
going to. Go ahead.
I just the garbage can.
Oh.
Thank you.
Did you change something on here?
Yes, I did.
Okay. Set that aside. Yeah, it kind of falls into a time where.
Trim stands for truth and knowledge.
Mm. Yes, it does.
Yes.
It's not hair.
You go ahead and start.
Okay, without me saying touch. Sure. This is the time of year when we get into, obviously, budget season. And by Florida Statutes 200, we're required to hold public hearings on the budget. And we have a first public hearing when we have a tentative budget put together, and then we also have a final budget hearing after we've kind of finalized all the numbers. What I've laid out before you is a series of workshops and the required public hearings that we typically do on a yearly basis to discuss the budget in a public setting, in a workshop setting. The first one on May 26, I believe, was already established at 1 o'clock to discuss budget priorities and to review the final legislative conference report. Now, this year is a little odd. Typically, the legislature has finished their work in 3 weeks from now, actually, the end of April, and we would get what we refer to as a final conference report, which is a report that is produced by the House conferring with the Senate. You know, they come together, they hash out their differences, and they produce this report which shows your final numbers based on the legislative session. So typically at that time, we'll come forward and we'll kind of give the board an update on what the numbers look like for next year, in addition to any new laws that have been passed that we need to be aware of, which typically cost us money. So we do that. The other reason we do that workshop is also, in the past, we as staff have been criticized by past boards that we would just show up with a preliminary budget and say, here, you go, approve it. So we provided that opportunity for the board to kind of give the superintendent some direction on what the board as a priority would like to see within the budget itself. So we also entertained that conversation that day. Then that will help us a month later down the road in June. On the 23rd, we split that day into two. Essentially, in the morning, I will go through the operating budget on a preliminary basis. By then, we should have a comprehensive budget book together in a preliminary fashion. I will cover all the funds from the general operating fund to federal funds to insurance trust fund and all the funds that we have in our school district. And then in the afternoon, on the 23rd, typically is reserved for a discussion of the five-year capital plan. This afternoon, you've kind of inserted another meeting in the calendar, so I'm not sure at this point how it's going to impact that 1 o'clock meeting. I think we probably need to have some discussion around that. Now, on July 1st, it starts what I refer to as the statutory clock. The statutory clock starts ticking July 1st. The TRIN law is very, very restrictive, and it's calendar-driven. The property appraiser certifies to us the tax roll for next year on July 1st, and that is used by the legislature, obviously, to the legislature typically gives us an estimate of what they think the tax value is going to be, but the certification from the local property, Mr. Nolte, will give you the final number. By statute, again, also on July 19th, the Department of Education will give us the revised millage rates, because the state uses an estimate, the local property appraiser gives you the real number, so they will adjust the millages up or down depending upon what the tax rule looks like. Then we would come back, and I just want to say here that wherever we have an opportunity to coincide a board meeting with the public hearing, we have done so in the past. The problem this year with the way the calendar falls, as you know, there's only one meeting in July, which is the 28th. So what happens is if you're going to have a public hearing on the 28th, you have to advertise within 2 to 5 days prior to that. So typically what happens is you would have seen the preliminary budget on the 23rd of June, and then in July, on the 23rd of July, we come back and we ask the board for approval for the superintendent to advertise the tentative budget at that point. It will appear in the press journal usually over the weekend. It's a big ad and it's very prescriptive on how you do it. If you do not do it according to the methods and means prescribed by TRIM, it can be invalid and we could get a challenge. Then on the 28th, I believe we have a board meeting scheduled for that day. Then we would just do the public hearing and then obviously go into the board meeting after that. And then following that, you have your second public hearing. Yes, ma'am.
This was scheduled originally for the 21st, which is the Tuesday in July. Are you changing it to the 23rd? Is that
you wrote Tuesday, but it's a Thursday.
It's a Thursday, yes.
So it should say Thursday.
It should say Thursday. My mistake.
So that's
okay.
The change.
Yes. Oh, my bad. Yes, typically what has happened in the past was board members would not come back from vacation until the week of the 28th. But the way the calendar falls, it kind of falls a week before the 28th. So I would need at least three board members here to go through that budget on the 23rd prior to the public hearing on the 28th to see.
Is that a problem?
Is that a
no.
Should do it.
Okay.
Whatever you need.
Okay.
Nobody's going anywhere. Is that what you're saying? We don't
sometimes in the past we've had to juggle calendars. We've had to juggle calendars and things of that nature. So.
Okay.
All right.
Okay.
Okay.
You set the date.
Okay.
Okay.
And I mean, you set the date and I guess let us know. But
okay. So on the next board agenda, we will put this under consent for your approval. And the reason this is important is that in the terms of public hearings for all public entities, the school board gets first priority. So once we publish this, other municipalities, cities will want this so they can schedule their, so it doesn't conflict with our date.
Why don't we put it under action?
Or action is fine by me.
So people are reminded that the board is setting the calendar for the budget.
Sure.
You know,
okay.
One of our
action item
is that people don't come in. Maybe if we talk about it and they say, "Oh, look, there's a calendar."
Okay.
Sure.
Yep. That's fine by me. Okay.
Okay.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And that's all I had, Mr. Searcy.
Okay. Okay. Let's see. It's 3:27. We got 3 minutes. We could talk about something. No, I don't see anything.
I think I have a lot of work done today.
Well, that's kind of what we're supposed to do. We're supposed to argue a little bit and move things ahead and bring up ideas. I think y'all been on the board a lot longer than I have, but it's what boards are about. So, that's right. This meeting was being recorded, not televised. Now I'm finishing my news flash there. Any further business?